Hi, everybody. It's Lori and Lawrence and John back for another hangout. We have some fun new stuff to talk about today, and we're glad to be back. We took a little breaks for a while there, but I think this might be two hangouts in a row. So thanks for watching, and I'm going to turn this immediately over to Lawrence, who's going to show us some anomalies with the Google Earth globe. So you're on, yeah. Lawrence.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do in a minute is bring up Google Earth and get it on the on North America. And I've got two men. I've got one man who's located at the Bering Strait. That's the part that, you know, far north of North America, where Russia and America almost meet, apart from the 50 miles or whatever it is of the Bering Strait. And then I've got another man at the Golden Gate Bridge. And both of these men are going to travel due east. And what I'd like you to have a stab at is where they will come out on the opposite coast of the United States. So I'm going to bring the map up now on Google Earth. So I'll share the screen and you can see where these places are located. If you're watching at home, have a go yourself. Oh dear, it's bringing all that infinity up. Have I got that up now? Yeah, okay. So there we are. So if you look at the little hand, the pointer, that is the Bering Strait and the Golden Gate Bridge. We're coming down. It's somewhere around about there. So these two men are going to get in their cars and they're going to set off due east. So, Laurie, you first. The man at up, right up in the far north at the Bering Strait, where do you think he's going to come out on the other side of the United States?
Well, by looking at due east on the globe, he's actually not going to come out in the United States. He's going to come out somewhere in northern Canada, but all right, well, that would be following the line of latitude, which you would think that would be due east. So what do you think, John?
Yeah, I would think you would, if anything, slight deviation. Maybe he might run into the Hudson Bay.
Okay.
You know, if he went a little lower, you know.
Okay, right. Well, you're going to be surprised there. So I've already pre-plotted this line in, but I'll then show you so you can see the angles for yourself. So we'll start off with the Bering Strait. Okay, over here, if you go due east from there to there, it's going to take you down to what's it called?
Louisiana.
It's going to take you down to Louisiana. So let's just show you that that's 90 degree angle. 90 degrees is due east. So let's go up there again. And you can see, oops, sorry. Okay, 90 degrees. You can see on the heading there. I'm sorry, made a mess of that one. Start again. 90 degrees, 85, 86, 87, 88, 90 degrees. So east is effectively southeast. It's not east on the globe.
Wow. How bizarre is that?
It's quite an error, you know. So you know, this guy there thinks he's going to come out over here somewhere, you know, up in these little tiny islands in northern Canada. He's going to be coming out, you know, somewhere not too far from where you are, Laurie.
Okay, so I actually watched it. Do that one more time, Lawrence. And those of you watching, you'll see the map length in the white box. You'll see the ground length, and then you'll see the heading, and the heading means the degrees of direction.
Okay.
So that the man's driving the car.
And the heading, sorry.
Hope he had plenty of gas money.
The heading, where it says
heading is what you're looking at. 86, 87, 88.
90 degrees is due east. So this one's set off from
90 degrees is due east. That one's coming out weirder even more. Oh, you had your little man in a different location. Look how just a few miles of him starting out changes his outcome.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So that is
okay. Weird. Okay. So that's pretty bizarre. that's what due east means.
Yeah, so then you go to the guy in the Golden Gate Bridge. So if you can see my little pointer, the little hand, that is roughly where the Golden Gate Bridge is in California. Where do you think that's going to come out at on the opposite side?
Or, well, based on that, the previous one, I would say somewhere in Florida, if he's lucky, doesn't run off the continent.
And what about you, John? Where would you say?
Well, Florida. Yeah, I don't know. That's a severe angle from Alaska. I would say
from Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, from Golden Gate. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Maybe close to the Tropic of Cap. What is that? Close to the Tropic of Cancer? I'm not sure. He might end up in the Gulf of Mexico.
There we go.
What?
He's going to come up Jacksonville. So
that's due east too.
Due east. So if you look at the ruler on that, so let me just move it across. There we go. So you're going from there. 90 degrees is, there you go. You can see the 91, 90 degrees. That line is 90 degrees, but obviously it's moving south of east.
Wow.
So that's more than slight a discrepancy for Google Earth.
So when you look at the globe, you want to say, well, which cardinal directions actually work out true? So if you've got somebody, say, at the equator, and they were going to move north, right along this line of longitude, so that's 360 degrees, that is absolutely spot on the globe. So that direction is, you know, that is correct on the globe. You know, whichever line of latitude you go on, so if you go on that one and go 360 degrees, which is north, again, you're going to follow that line of latitude, 359.6.
Longitude, wow.
Longitude, yeah, so you can look at all of these. Let's go to that one.
Okay, so the up and down works, north and south works.
Yeah, so if you're going north, then you're going to go north. And if you're going to go south, you're going to go south. The only place where east and west works is on the equator. So we've got the equator here. So, oops, let me just clear that. So you've got a man right on the equator, and he's going to go to the east, okay, which is 90 degrees again. Oops. There we go, 90 degrees. And again, you can see 86, 87, 80. He's going to follow right along the equator.
Okay, so north and south works everywhere. Spin that puppy around, Lawrence, and let's try it on the backside just to be sure. Let's try the prime meridian. There you go.
Yeah, so if you go north along that one, it's probably going to take you straight up. There we go. So if you were there and you went north, you're going to get the 360 degrees again. There you go, 360 degrees. So it's perfectly straight. So that part of the map of the globe is an accurate representation of distance. But everything else is distorted, apart from the equator. So everything in terms of latitude is skew-whiff. Obviously, the word parallel means equidistance apart. So all these lines of latitude are an equal distance apart from each other. So if you traveled along that latitude and went east, then you should stay on that line of latitude, you know, but you don't. So if for example, somebody's on that line of latitude there, I'm not sure what that one is, it's below the UK, it's probably, about 40 degrees north, something like that. So if you got somebody there who goes at 90 degrees, he's going to be coming, there we go, 70, 80, there we go, he's going to end up there. So I'll just save that and call it 40, I think it's 40 degrees. 40 degrees, that is the distortion. And then you've got somebody say the next line of latitude down.
Have you noticed that when you do this every time, you end up basically 1.5 latitude lines down from where you started?
Well, the distortion gets more as you move away from the equator, but there we go. So somebody on the next major line of latitude down, 89.83, let's save that. Let's call that 30. So you're going to build up a profile of where it's going to take you. So let's have a look at the Tropic of Cancer going due east, 90 degrees. That's going to take you, there we go, 86, 88, 89, 90. So the less distance
apart, the closer they are together to the equator. And the more distorted they are, the farther north.
There we go. So that's got 90.74, but you get the general gist of that. Let's save that. Call that cap. So this is the distortion. And of course, when you go into the southern hemisphere, so the one in the equator goes straight across. Let's just stick the equator line in. So 90 degrees at the equator is going to take you right along the equator. You know, there you go.
Right.
89, 90.4, near as damn it. All right, so let's just save that call. Mana equator. Okay, and then, but when you move south, the lines go in the opposite direction, so you end up being north of where you'd expect to go. So let's say you look at the Tropic of Capricorn, and you go due east there. So that's 90 degrees again. Again, it's not taking you south, it's taking you north. 80, there we go, 90.05. So let's save that and call that Catman.
Their globe is pretty hard to navigate on with a compass, huh, Lawrence?
Yeah. And that's let's just put one more in.
Okay.
This is only at 10 degrees below the equator, so there shouldn't be that much distortion.
I think we need to have a talk with the U.S. Department of State geographer. It says down there on the bottom, data, SIO, NOAA, U.S. Navy, NGA, GEBCO. I think we need to have a talk with them.
How did they navigate across the seas like this on a globe?
Yeah, how did they do that on the globe?
That one down. Let's have a look.
Nothing is due east.
You can't go due east on a globe
unless you're just going to hang out at the equator.
So it basically. So if you're below the equator and you go east, you're going to be going north of east. And if you're above the equator and you go east, you're going to be going south of east. But if you look at how these lines all curve in, this sort of lends weight to the Calignan map because
they're all the north ones and the south ones are all headed for the equator at 90 degrees.
Look at the shape that you're actually creating here. You're making a shape of how the Earth really is. So it's all concertining in to make the diamond shape. And obviously, if you go to the other side, yeah. And you go in the opposite direction.
You know what's really pretty funny, Lawrence? Go back, push that globe back just a little bit with Africa in the middle, just to make a note.
Yeah.
It's taking up almost the whole side of the globe. Hello, yeah. Big Africa.
So let's just show the symmetry. So we got somebody who's gone that way. Now somebody's going to go the other way, and they're going to go at 270.
Let's take them from the same location and go 270, right?
I can't move that thing while I'm doing it, so I'll just stick it in anyway. Okay. 270.
A little more, a little more, a little more. Big, boom, boom. Let's take that one. Oops.
Oh, okay.
A little less.
There we go.
Okay. That's not bad.
So you've got that. I'll just save that as anything. All right. So you're getting this, and then I'll do one more just so you can see, and we'll do that one there and do 270 on that. Let's move it across a bit so I don't have to go over that box. 268, 267. There we are.
I want to play devil's advocate. Like, surely this must be a software issue. Surely they can be calculating that accurately.
Surely nobody uses this Google Earth globe to navigate with.
Well, so you look, so you can see that everything is getting skewed, yeah? And what I was thinking, it might be quite a big project, but if John could actually go and map all this stuff out on the globe and then run it as a graphics, I'm sure from the globe we could actually get the Kalignan map. Because what we're getting is the Kalignan map shape when you put in the new lines of latitude like this. It's gonna,
I recall someone tried to catalog a whole bunch of moonrises and moonsets and moonpaths, and I recall there were similar lines like this all askew through the time.
I kind of recall that too.
So the question for global navigation, if you've got an aircraft, you know, and they're navigating over the globe, the only place they're going to be going in the right direction is if they're bang on the equator, or they're going straight north or straight south. If they were flying across the United States from one airport to the other, you'd think that they'd have to go due east to go to what appears to be on the map, the other side of the map. But obviously the map's wrong. The maps are going to be a totally different shape when you factor in the fact that everything is out of kilter, isn't it?
Well, and this is these are kind of looking like those great circle routes too, Lawrence.
That's true. That may this may actually explain the great circle routes, because completely wrong.
We really, really, really want to go due east, but gosh darn it, we don't even know how we got there, but we managed. Well, look at it this way, Lawrence. Look at it this way. Nobody anymore.
I just want one more to show you, because I always...
Okay, can I make a comment, though? Because before you mess with this, nobody anymore except sailors, and even very few of those, are navigating by instruments anymore. They're navigating by GPS coordinates. Well, obviously they must be skewing the GPS coordinates to match the flat map and not the globe, because otherwise people would be lost hopelessly.
Yeah. So what, on the coast of America, where is it at 50 degrees north? Is it Detroit? Where is it that Mark Sargent hangs out at?
No, I thought that was Seattle.
Vancouver, somewhere.
Yeah, 50 degrees north. So let's have a look at a flight from Seattle to London and see where it goes. You know, a proper flight. Hang on, let's move that away so we can... There we go. There's Seattle, somewhere around about there. That's probably the island he lives on, just off there. And we're going to go to London. Let's see where the flight takes us. Here we go. So, yeah, it does go over Greenland, doesn't it? That's the shortest route. So he's taking you over Greenland, but on the map, It should be going across the top of Canada, shouldn't it, to get there? So, yeah, the aircraft are flying over Greenland. It's just the map is wrong. Greenland, it does go over Greenland, but Greenland isn't there. It's somewhere else. There's your route. Anyway, let's save that.
Hold on. Before somebody takes a screen capture of you saying Greenland's not there, it's someplace else, and takes it completely out of context, which has happened recently.
Greenland is there.
People taking things out of context.
So that red line there is the flight path from there over Watsi. But obviously it's going up over, you know, into much higher latitudes to get there, but the representation of how the land lies is on the globe is completely incorrect. It's only accurate going north and east-west at the equator. So when
I can't remember the last time anybody went up to the captain in an airplane while it's flying and said, "Hey, which direction are we going on the compass?" You know, I mean, the point is nobody checks the information. They just are along for the ride. So
I always understood the explanation was it's a shorter route going north.
So
it is maybe, but like that's sort of misdirection in words.
It is on the Kalinin. It is on the Kalinin too, isn't it?
See what direction that is to go from Seattle to London in terms of degrees? Then that's a bearing of 32 degrees.
Yeah,
which is north. It's
northeast.
Yeah.
So why would you fly northeast?
They're both on the same latitude. Look, if you look where London is,
they're both on the same latitude.
They're moving in across the latitude.
All right, Lawrence.
Exactly the same latitude.
Is it possible for you to make a line from Seattle to London staying on the latitude?
He won't let me.
What? It won't let you.
Let's try it. There we go.
Curses.
Hang on, let's do another line. You could do it in little stages, but to go from there to there.
Well, what I want to wanted to see was what they were calling the direction. Well, you got 78 degrees there for that little jump.
Yeah.
Not just direction, but how about distance as well?
Well,
Got to be an issue as well.
It looks like if you measured the arc of the red line and then you measured the arc of the actual latitude line, they'd be pretty similar. But one is higher, so I bet they're about the same distance. Why would you fly up over Greenland?
That's a good point. They are about the same distance, but that's fascinating. Well, that means that part of Earth is truncated for some reason, as is the South. The thing that really boggles my mind is how everything skews towards the equator. And then it sort of just pans out. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can understand the northern and the southern. Because, you know, we understand the Kalinin map, and okay, yeah, I get it. But the equator, I'm having a little trouble with that. Does anyone else?
All right, Lawrence, for the sake of comparison, would you please bring up a copy of the Kalinin or the diamond map? Let's just look at it now that we've had this little exercise of watching these lines go east and west.
I'll see if I've got one.
Hey.
It's a map people haven't seen in a long time, huh?
I mean, I can open one if you want me to. But you're the one sharing the screen. There it is. Oh, there's the Kalinin with all the little people standing on it.
These guys
are all standing upright.
All the people on the Kalinin.
Okay, look at the lines of, let's just compare the lines of latitude here on this map. They're all straight lines.
Yeah.
The
shape of the continents are all different here than they are on the globe, obviously.
Yes, they are.
Yes, but if you were going to go from Bering Strait, Alaska, if you're going to go from Seattle to London, that's a straight line.
Okay. Yeah. And if you're going to go from the Bering Strait due east by the angle of that tilt, where would you come out? You would not come out at Louisiana.
Yeah.
Well, this is just
I don't know how to compare due east here to due east on that globe, Lawrence.
Yeah, I don't know. I've only come across this.
Because today. What? But no, but the point is, due east on this map looks more normal than, I mean, if you were in Golden Gate Bridge, where the heck is that? I forgot.
You're squaring. Well, from Seattle to London, you're squaring the curve.
Yeah. So on this map, due east looks pretty normal to what you would expect it to look like.
Do the fly
compared to the globe one.
Let me do a line. I've got a line on this somewhere. Here we go. That's a pencil. View home.
But it does, you know, the idea that the reason why I said let's bring this up is on this map, due east makes a lot more sense. But
there's London.
Yep.
Oops. Is it giving me a line?
I mean, it's just about due east.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, just about. Yeah. It's not perfect, though.
Tiny on there, but yeah, they're on the same latitude, it's going to take you there. It's just a straight line. So that's really what the plane's doing. Or you'd think. But they're not going over Greenland, are they?
But then again, the planes are flying in the air, which is graduated in levels of density. The higher you go up, and I don't know, is the level of air like less dense at the poles as well? Because there's you're up at the top of the point, the peak.
I don't know.
Does that have something to do with warping is what I'm saying? Warping.
Yeah, we've had every kind of discussion about the Great Circle Route concept, everything from, well, they're going north to catch the jet stream, or they're going, because the Great Circle Routes are more pronounced at the far south and the far north than they are in the middle. Right, Lawrence?
Oh, they're very distorted, yeah, in the extremities.
In the north and the south. And people have said, well, maybe they're, you know, going down there to save gas by
fuel. I heard recently that they had to teach some of the pilots that fly these northern routes to also learn how to navigate via the stars, similar to the way the guys had to do it on the ships.
Really?
It's something to do with, what was it? It was just so recently.
Like if they had a computer breakdown or something?
Because
I think the whole thing crashes if they have a computer breakdown on planes nowadays. Because nobody manually flies them all the way anymore. I guess they do a little here and there. But
That's a good point, too. But, well, I mean, I'm just fascinated by the fact that the air routes are curving similar to the old sea navigation routes. You know, they all sort of like coincided into like a point at which case, you know, they all tried to follow the North Star, but they still had all these curved routes. I don't know what the points in between the intersections were. That's something that I haven't researched, I have to say. But I'm sure you've all seen them. There's never a straight line on anything.
So. Well, all I know is we pose a big, big question here to Google Earth and NOAA, the National Organization, what is that? N-O-A-A, NOAA, forgot what they even are.
The guy and, with the boat. No.
Yeah. NOAA, not that NOAA, N-O-A-A, God, I'm going to have to look it up now because I just had a brain fart and I forgot. So we have a big question for them as to why due east does that in the north and the south, but yet it follows the lines of longitude perfectly going 360 degrees. So that is an anomaly that doesn't work for me because people are plotting all kinds of things and measuring distances and doing all kinds of stuff with using this Google Earth app. And this is a big problem error as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and if you go east-west, if the globe was true, if you plotted something directly from east to west on a line of latitude, it would stay on that line of latitude, but it doesn't. It only stays...
Well, not only that, Lawrence, but have you ever gone through the exercise of, you can go online and you can ask, where is the opposite side of the globe from my location? Have you ever done that?
No.
Because everybody in America always goes, oh, if you dig a hole through the earth, you're going to come out in China, right? That was just always the big thing. It's going to come out in China. Right. It's supposed to be on the other side of the earth. But yeah. I think from my location, if I came out on the other side of the earth, if I remember correctly, it was somewhere in Australia. Hmm. And if I came out on the other side of the globe.
Well, I have a question for Lawrence. Do you think that this would work if you were, let's say, trying to draw that line with your declination along ground level? Like, instead of, like, looking at the globe, looking from the Google Earth globe where it is from whatever elevation or whatever distance you are from it. But if you, like, zoomed in and went along ground level, and then plotted a course along 90 degrees from a certain location, would the path be similar to, you know, trying to create one from, you know, sort of, you know, an external, let's say, in orbit perspective? You know, yeah. Did you get all that? I don't know. I got to translate that. I don't know. Am I doing that thing where I talk like a song? Okay.
You just visited the Tower of Babel this weekend, didn't you?
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding. What I'm talking about is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. I did look it up. So let's get back to serious here. What are the ramifications of this information to both globe believers and flat earthers alike? What do you think the ramifications of this is? Or does it even matter? You know, it's like the whole world doesn't revolve around Google Earth, even though people think it does. They think Google Earth is like the Earth, like photographic imagery almost. There's little planes flying around taking pictures of Earth, and that's what they make Google Earth out of. And
Earth right now? You mean
we all know it's a cartoon, right? Yeah, we all know it's a cartoon. Or maybe we don't all know, but for those of us who like really not understand reality, Google Earth Maps is a cartoon of the globe. And if you pull out from, did you close it already? Close the program already, Lawrence?
Yeah, you're on screen, I think now, Laurie, or I am, or somebody is.
No, I'm talking about, I'll put that back on shared screen again, the Google Earth, and zoom out from it.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'll just flash back and forth between you and me and John and... Because I'm feeling silly.
Well, zooming
all
out,
right,
yeah.
There you are. You're on it. You're on. Okay. Zoom out of this fake planet.
Okay.
Keep zooming. I think because you have it on the surface.
It's an alternate planet. Don't you know that? It's alternate facts.
Oh, look. Zoom over there to the left, Lawrence. They got the Milky Way nice for us. Look at that.
Yeah.
Move your image over.
Yeah, but they can't give you the moon.
There it went. Right there. See? Look, it's the Milky Way.
But they can't give you the moon.
The Great Rift. Okay. Yeah, where's the moon? Darn it.
They can't calculate it.
Okay.
Oh, wow, look at that with all your marks on it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it more accentuated?
and Lars was going east all the time.
If anyone doesn't realize this, all that gravity, all that graffiti is Lawrence's doing. He's been the one who's like making all that graffiti.
My point is,
my observation of that, if you look at this Google Earth here, that's not a sphere, it's egg-shaped, isn't it? Look at it.
Kind of, a little bit. Of course, it is an oblate spheroid, according to...
It's very oblate.
Yeah. Okay, so my point is, we all know that that's not a photographic image of Earth. And can you turn it around back to where Africa's on there again?
Let's bring it back a bit.
Not much. I want to see Africa on the size that it is right now. Okay. Look at how big that sumbitch is. I'm sorry. It's just... Okay, so now look at those lines. What does that say? That says fake globe to me right there. Boom. All the those curved down angled lines, of, that's all east and west.
Yeah.
Just not right about that. All right, that's it. That's the exercise. I just I wanted you to zoom out so that people could see that this is, you know, some bullshit overlay with the Milky Way in the back. Look how big that is. Milky Way stayed the same size, no matter the Earth got really small. We got really far away from it. Oh, boy. All right. So,
else? Hang on. Let me discard that. Let me just go to Facebook.
Infinity.
Okay. Why are you going to Facebook? Stop.
I just want to show this one because.
Whoa.
Yeah, be careful because you got people in groups making comments, and I wouldn't show that, please.
No, I was just showing my. Oh, I don't need to go to Facebook. Now, let me just go back to Paint.
Went to Facebook.
You went to Facebook anyway. I swear to God. I mean, you know.
There we go. So, oops. So, what we've got here.
This is why we can't have anything nice, okay?
And we got this man, and he's been glued by his boots to the base of the Earth.
Okay. Well, he'd have to be.
Now, this man knows he's upside down, but people say, well, the Earth is so big, you know, and in the blackness of space, you can't tell whether you're up or down. So if we made that globe 100 times bigger, or a bit bigger...
Would he know he's upside down?
You know, how big does it have to be before the man... miraculously thinks, oh, I'm the right way up now. And how big does it have to be so that his boots don't have to be glued to the Earth? Because at some point, when you make that Earth bigger and bigger and bigger, suddenly gravity comes into force. The man suddenly thinks, oh, I'm the right way up now, and I don't need the glue to hold me onto it. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
So people start arguing the toss about curvature. You know, if you're on a globe, you can know about it. You know, and if you're anywhere apart from right on the bloody top, you know, you're going to be stuck out at all these ridiculous angles. You just won't be able
to... Mark, did you make this cute little meme with the crane and the globe and the guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. You rock.
So the question was, how big does the globe have to be?
Before you would not know you were upside down, and before your feet didn't have to, gravity kicked in and your feet didn't have to be glued to the ground, and your head didn't feel like it was going to explode from all the blood rushing to it.
You see, if I make that, that's at 50% scale. Okay, I've made it 100% now. Look, the man's still upside down. I've doubled the size, and now I've made it 300%. The man is still upside down. If I made it 1,000%, what's the thing? 800%, if I can find the man. There we are. Still upside down. If I made it 1,000,000%, the guy is still going to be frigging well upside down. Even if gravity existed and could pin the man to the Earth, he would still be frigging upside down, and he still bloody well know about it.
Yes. his head would be full of blood and he would hate his yeah. life because it would feel like his eyes were going to pop out of his head after about 30 minutes.
Yeah, people say, oh.
Just like those people that are in the International Space Station who always look like they're either hanging upside down, which is why their hair always looks, those women's hair always looks all goofball, or their faces look like distorted and their eyes are always like kind of squinty and their faces are always red because I think they're hanging upside down.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that's part of the illusion. And then they just, you know, flip things. But anyway, that's on the side.
And you've got these people out there for 8 inches on a mile. And you think, well, what's the point of that? Why would you need
to do that? Let me ask you something, Lawrence. I'm going back to these funky lines that we drew in the East and everything. I want to ask both you and John, what does that do to the circle flat Earth model? Anything?
It's
other than the fact that it's already been destroyed anyway, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, it certainly makes the equator more prominent. The fact that everything's skewing towards the equator, that means that's the center. It just doesn't make sense that it's
a straight line. On the AE map, it's a big circle. So mm-hmm. on the globe, you know, that's the only true directions that
straight
you can
line
make. Is a straight line.
Well, that's the only true straight line of east.
Yeah.
Maybe so, that's a Google Earth clue.
So we're
letting you know everything we can let you know without, you know, just blatantly telling you that this shit don't work. And yet, you know, all these people are still running flashlights around in a circle. You know, here's how it works. So, you know, it's actually an interesting, I'm going to kind of segue to that for a minute. It's actually an interesting time right now because there are more and more militant flat earthers who are being vocal about the AE map being a joke and a hoax and false and disinfo and whatever else you can call it. And I'm seeing lots more arguments not within the groups, but because I don't belong to that many anymore, but on personal people's Facebook pages, they're coming out for the AE is doomed. The AE's dead. It was, you know, a psyop, blah, blah. And other flat earthers are arguing with them that are still AEers and circle earthers. And it's becoming now an in-house argument. Okay. I think we call that intramural. And so what's interesting though, is when you sort of snap out of it and you at least take the moment to question, wait a minute, is that wrong? What are these other models? And I don't care about whether you heard about Square or Diamond or Pac-Man or any of the other things that words that people use to describe alternative models. The one thing that I do notice, though, is once you're out of it, you know, once you step back and you go, you know, that there is some problems with that. And I think I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to revisit this whole concept of shape and map and model. Once you get there and then you watch an Eric Dubé video, like the one I watched a couple days ago or yesterday with Eddie Bravo. Isn't that his name? Eddie Bravo? Yeah. Yeah. Had interviewed Eric Dubé and Eddie was all about, oh, let's put your model, you know, the flat earth model up on the screen and let's, you know, show people what we're talking about. And Eric Dubé's in the background live from Thailand. Just running that same program over and over again about the ice wall and the circling sun and moon and da da da. And once you get to where you can hear the utter bullshit that's coming out of this guy's mouth, and then you look at that model and you just cringe. It's like, Oh, you really didn't go there. You didn't show that again. Oh, stop showing that. That's not the flat earth model. So why is it that I'm there, you're there, John, you're there, Lawrence, and what? Why is it that we see this big O problem and these other people, there it is, there's the flat earth, you know. I saw one the other day on stacks of turtles. Obviously was a joke on the flat pie turtle flying around on a turtle theme, which we all know, you know, everybody's gotten off of that joke anyway. But the point is, why can we see it and they can't see it? Why does it make us cringe and it doesn't? Others are like, yep, there it is. That's what I know.
I think because we are thinking, logical, critical human beings, and we see where things just physically can't work.
Well, but they think they are too.
Okay. I have no response to that then.
Well, okay, so how do
the proof is in the pudding.
My point is, how do we get through to them that we're not just being buttheads and going against the you know, trying to paddle upstream here? I mean, it isn't a pleasant place to be opposed in your belief system to everybody else. Okay, you're not a glober and you're not, you know, an AE mapper, flat earther. What the hell are you then? Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to say is I mean, I've already been through I've been mocked and ridiculed for flat earth in and of itself, for even going there. Okay. And then I got mocked and ridiculed by my fellow flat earthers. Can't we all just get along, people? For bucking the system with the map and the model. My question is, why does any of us need a fancy, easy, simple explanation, map, and model in order to say we're flat earthers? Now, before you say anything else, you know, before you answer, because I'm not sure what the question was there, but the interesting thing is that most flat earthers weren't absolutely sure that they believed the earth was flat based on the whole, where's the curvature and why is the horizon always at eye level and all those other things. Okay. When they're constantly being ridiculed by where's the edge of your circle. Okay. And they're being ridiculed by other flat earthers who are saying, no, there's the same star trails are in the south as they are in the north. You know, people like Paul Kofo are getting just bashed because he went out and did circle star trails from New Zealand, pointing south. There it is. Took him, showed how he was doing it with his camera, had his phone. Here's my camera in the background. Here's getting ready to click for the 30-second exposure, and boop, there's the film it took right there with the trails. I didn't put them in Photoshop, didn't manipulate anything. That's the live film. And yet, at the same time, you know, his can't we all get along flat earther friends are bashing him and making shitty videos, whatever you call it, hit pieces. So,
you know, a lot of people, you know, want to try and understand something, even though it's like beyond their comprehension. Maybe some things in this flat earth topic are beyond our comprehension. Like perhaps, you know, we can't ever get to a physical point location where we can see the whole of the earth. Maybe that is, you know, not possible for us, regardless of what sort of people like at NASA have tried to, like, you know, pull the wool over our eyes or present something that is not necessarily the way it is. Okay.
Or a lot of something.
Right. So we can accept that there are things that are not, that are beyond our comprehension. And a lot of people attribute things to God. And then there's a lot of people that go looking into the religious books. As your last guest, you had a wonderful conversation how religion plays a part in this and how people view religion and people's different people's perspectives from religion. And it wasn't the typical conversation on religion, which I just like to say right now. That was nice. But there's that aspect of the general population that finds it easy to glom onto something that they don't have to think about. It's easy in this world.
Somebody
did all the other work. I don't have to do the research, or somebody thought of it already. I'm just showing up at the parade to march. In a way.
And then here's what happens. Okay.
Mm. There's a little dissonance.
If nobody's there to hold your hand, okay, and walk you, spoon feed you, as we call it, or walk you through the rabbit hole, okay, you're at the mercy of the highest hit videos on Flat Earth, the highest hit Google searches on Flat Earth. Who decides those are the number one hits? Was it actually people looking, or was it Google themselves that made that decision to put them at the top of the search? And so what happens is that the more of those you see, that one validates the one before that, and the next one validates the last one, and everybody keeps validating and validating. And then suddenly someone comes along, like a you or a me or a Lawrence, and goes, oh, no, 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 no. You've been duped. That's not real. That's not the way it works. Well, why not? Okay. So in kicks the exact same cognitive dissonance that kicked in when someone challenged their globe that led them to look into it in the first place. Most people will tell you they look into Flat Earth to debunk it and then end up not being able to. But here's another interesting twist about the religion aspect. If you already are a Christian or a Muslim or a Buddhist or whatever, and you hear about something that is a pretty big lie, okay, and you believed it all your life, what is one of the first things you're going to go and do? You're going to go look for validation in your book that you're comfortable with, your religious text. What if you don't have that? What if you are not a biblical believer or, the Quran? Because people say, oh, yeah, the Quran is a flat earth book. And then other people say, oh, yeah, the Bible's a flat earth book, too. And he's like, wait a minute. Didn't you just live like the whole first 2/3 of your life thinking that the Bible said it was validating the globe that the scientists told you was a globe? And you thought that the same words said it was a globe. Now the same words say it's a circle. Or you read some other text that says, no, it's a square. There's both. And what if you're an atheist? What if you're an agnostic and you don't have any of that as your back-supported, documentation or even religious text? What are you at the mercy of then? Because we're all at the mercy of something. I mean, every single one of us is being bombarded every day with information, disinformation, propaganda, sell you this, sell you that, teach you this, teach you that. And, it is pretty hard to go to the point where you don't believe anything. It's pretty darn hard to get there. And I mean, I was watching a movie the other night and the character said, if you want to see the truth, hold no opinion. It's a Zen saying. And I thought about that and I thought, well, that's pretty darn on the money. So I actually posted it on my Facebook. If you want to see the truth, hold no opinion. And people say, well, that's coming from a pretty opinionated person, you, right? And I said, The important word here, bless you, Lawrence. The important word here is hold. Not, it doesn't say have no opinion. Okay. It says hold no opinion. I've have plenty of opinions, but I hold very few of my opinions as concrete. Would you agree with that, John and Lawrence? Otherwise, how would you even be a very good researcher of anything?
Yeah, even just a creative person. You have to mold yourself and bend and flow and be able to take on a different.
Leave the water.
Well, yeah, you have to look. You know, you have to walk in another man's shoes. You have to look at something from a different angle. Oh, any other analogy you can think of?
Yeah.
Can I, Lawrence, change it back a minute now, Laurie? Because this thing that I saw this week, I don't know where.
Once again, Lawrence has not been paying any attention to what John and I have been talking about, and he has continued on his research, which is what he always does. So go ahead, Lawrence.
This actually touched quite a few people. It's not my work, and it's not the person who posted it. He was come from somewhere else. But I'm just going to share a screen. This is for John, because I think Laurie's seen this. I'm going to play this for just 2 minutes. So don't worry, Laurie. And I'll turn the sound off. And then I'm going to ask John a little question at the end of this little clip. So
yeah, well, here goes a copyright strike, because Lawrence thinks that it's the sound that we're getting copyrighted for.
There won't be, right. So here we go. So I'm just going to play this for 2 minutes, okay? And then
I like it already.
Okay, thank goodness we're not having any sound. Oh, I have seen this.
Oh, is she the sun? That's fascinating. Oh, it's like five different people behind her. What?
Just watch. For those of you listening to the podcast, we're very sorry there is no sound, but Lawrence is playing China, My Dream Chinese Deaf Dance Team, Thousand Hands of Buddha video.
So I'll stop that now. So the question, John, is you watched that. Can you tell me how many dancers there were there?
How many dancers there were? I cannot say. I mean, if I stopped it, I could count. But I would say hands. I would say maybe 20, maybe close to 20 hands, it looked like.
How many dancers did you see there?
Oh, well, I just saw one dancer, yes.
It was one dancer, and it was just filmed in different, you know, positions, a frame at a time or whatever, but it gives the illusion of many dancers.
Claymation, John.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was trying to figure out was it a kaleidoscope effect, or were there actual physical people there behind her? But then it seemed that there were way too many.
Stop motion photography, and it's supposed to represent the movement of time.
Mm-hmm. So, John.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Lawrence.
John, Laurie, John, have you ever watched the movie?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and when you watch the movie, effectively you're watching it a frame at a time, you know, one image at a time that comes onto the screen, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the movie that you're watching, all of the information is already there, isn't it? All of it.
Yeah.
But you cannot watch that movie all in one go, can you? You're incapable. Your meat suit cannot see the entire movie in one go.
Well, I'm stuck in a situational awareness where I'm fixed to a specific location in time space. Now, if I consider that everything here is nonlinear, nonlinear time, nonlinear space, then light is not a wave and light is not a particle. Light can be, and so like frames of a movie, it's actually, I didn't see the movie, I just know the movie. I know it, I know every frame. I haven't necessarily seen it, or I could jump into a portion of frames.
Your culture is only able to view things in a linear fashion, one single moment at a time. Is that, that's true, isn't it? One moment at a time.
Yeah, for instant replay, but
Are many documented cases of people who've had near death, you know, they've been on the in a hospital room or whatever, and they've had these near death experiences, and they've seen all the life that they've lived so far. They've seen it all in an instant flash. So they're watching the entire movie of their entire life in one instance. So in that situation, they're moving out of their normal body and the spirit can see everything at once. Your spirit can see everything at once. But your meat suit, your consciousness, your mind cannot.
Well, so, if I can interject here, sorry. But yes, I agree with you, and I go so a little further to say that it's the unconscious or the subconscious mind that can visualize it, and it's the conscious mind that can only analyze it. It's like a dream when you're in the dream and you're like enjoying it, and then as soon as you start to look around and go, wait a second, where am I? What is this? What's going on? You start to analyze it, and you basically internalize and you extricate yourself from the realm.
Yeah. Well, what led me to look into this was there's a guy called Thomas Thompson. He's got a Facebook page called Flat Earth News.
And he's been on a hangout with us before.
I actually saw this in December, but I only read the first few lines. But let me read a bit more of it because this is quite mind-blowing. I had to read it a few times to try and get my head around it, but this is what he's saying. So I'll just go back up to the top, and it says, this is back to Pac-Man, how the Pac-Man Earth theory actually works. It says the Pac-Man theory originated in ancient Egypt. The story was told that a giant blue or gold goddess, the Nut, uses her body to form what we call the firmament, the great egg or dome. At the end of the day, this goddess swallows the sun or other luminaries and objects with her mouth on the western side and immediately gives birth to them from her vagina, which is at the eastern side of the map. This can be done vice versa. Yes, I know this sounds like I'm talking about teleportation, doesn't it? Well, I'm not. There is a science that isn't generally taught in public schools, but instead is taught in occult schools, mystery schools, secret societies, etc. The Freemasons are one such group. This is why no one believes in the real square flat earth and refuse to even entertain the idea. These people are missing the very simple science of time and space. The AE style projections, such as the Gleason map, are merely clocks, not a map at all. Used to program those who stumble onto flat earth, it is to lure you away from the truth while letting you think you've actually discovered something. The basic defense mechanism was set in place centuries ago by these societies. The UN flag is one such example. So what is the secret? The secret can be found in chapter 10 of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth of ancient Egypt. The secret is time does not move. If I froze time in your room, nothing could move because even the very air molecules that you must pass through would be frozen in place and you would be unable to pass through them. Correct. Well, this works in the same way, only time never moves. It is you as a spirit soul that travels from point to point in time. That flesh body you are in, that only exists in that moment. And now it's gone and you're in a different body. And now that body's gone. Example, you think you see the sun. You think you see the sun travel across the sky from the eastern wall to the western wall exit the western wall and immediately reappear at the eastern wall again. But in reality, the sun already exists at every single point of its path all at once. It doesn't leave through a wall or teleport. It doesn't move at all. But you are only able to perceive... you're only able to perceive... Where's that gone now?
Oh, that's so on the right path, Lance.
Yeah.
You're only able to perceive that part of the sun that exists in that particular time zone that you are inhabiting. Your flesh body is not merely a torso, a head, two arms and two legs. Your flesh body literally stretches from your birth to your death as one giant entity. It is a huge thing that spans time itself. But your consciousness is trapped in linear time, Saturn, and can only interact with that part which is currently there. I use the example that you see a two-dimensional hexagon when reality is a three-dimensional cube. Now add time as the fourth dimension and you begin to see that all form is merely incomplete illusion. You are not seeing anything as it really is, and more important, nothing can move apart from your spirit. So basically what you're saying is when your body moves, every moment that your body moves, it's actually a different body.
Like the dancers.
Like the dancers, yeah.
You know, Lawrence, I had this thought just today. It was along the same lines that the sun is not where it is right now. It's in all the places at all the times of the year. We're just seeing it as it progresses in a form of time, and that's fascinating. Yeah, that we're moving in, that we are caught in, we are caught up in, that we cannot escape from. Yeah.
Which makes that little flashlight circling thing over the pizza pan map really look stupid when you get to that level of thought, right? I mean, when you think about really, you really came up with that, and if you explain it with great flair and confidence and what appears to be integrity and you know, really into it, most people will go, yeah, I see how that works. You know, and then you have somebody like Morgyle add to that, the reason why it works in the south versus the north is because, you know, it's the same thing as a record with the record arm, you know, and as it, the same RPMs, but the farther it gets out here or the farther it gets closer to the center, it appears to be going the same speed. No, that's a record player. We're talking about the sun and the earth and what we all observe. And, you know, it doesn't speed up and slow down, and it doesn't have to. So why? That's like gravity. That's like any of those reverse engineered ad hoc theories that those sons of bitches as old as the globe have added on for 500 years or however long they've been doing it. Okay. So stop doing that. You don't need to do that. You don't need to come up with these bogus theories to sell something to somebody, you know, buy now, reduce price. Lawrence sent me a thing the other day, a link to some website on Zazzle that's got all of these flat earth things for sale, $24.99 this and now $14.99 for that and $399 for a Gleason map, you know, woohoo. Okay. And
I'm sure it'll be worth more in the future.
You can even get it stretched on canvas and, you know, hang it on your wall like a regular piece of artwork. And
like,
you know,
follower.
Watches and bangles and baubles of every shape and dimension.
Because that's what's really important.
Important. Wear your flat earthness with flair.
With flair and pride. Yeah. Yes, I know. Yeah. I noticed you don't have much pieces of flair on your
yeah,
track.
Isn't that what they call the flair on the little badges at the what a jacuzzi? What's that place?
Oh my god.
What
shenanigans.
Oh, you don't have enough flair on. You're gonna get cited for that. And so, you know, come on with that. What is up with that? And, you know, Lawrence even said the other day, he said, boy, the minute this flat earth thing hits the mainstream, there's going to be all kinds of people cashing in on flat earth, you know, commercialism. And of course they are. They already have. I mean, I
Shaq
can't
has got to deal with the general insurance. Come on. There you go.
Yeah. Shaq. Well, boom. I mean, what are we going to have a flat earth insurance firm start up? Special just for flat earthers, buy your insurance from us. It's cheaper or whatever. Or, you know, we'll donate portion of our proceeds to the Flat Earth Society or, you know,
well,
I mean,
that's cool.
On.
Maybe Tila Tequila will get a good job in sales.
Okay. And here's another one. Okay. Let's think about this. All right. So if you're somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of free time, nor do you want to devote a lot of free time, the amount of hundreds of hours and now over 2 years for both Lawrence and I, more for him, to dedicate to the research and investigation to Flat Earth. If you want the Cliff's Notes version, by God, there's somebody out there to give it to you. I mean, and it will be the soap on a rope of flat earth. I mean, it will be easy to handle and, you know, completely all in one package, celebrating flat earth for you without you having to do much of anything, right?
Just order the DVD.
Isn't that the same thing that we did when we went to indoctrination education? Sit through hours and hours and years of classroom time being told what to think and told what to believe and told
Repete.
What science is.
Repete.
So really, are you going to do the same process for Flat Earth? Are you going to let somebody else tell you what the Flat Earth is about? And what you, where you live? I mean, if you took the time to stop and think, even for a moment, to entertain the idea that the earth might be flat, are you really going to just go and let somebody regurgitate to you what flat earth is? Okay. And are you going to double check and I can't tell you how many people that I posted about watching the equinox 2 days ago. The sun rose at my house on the 27th latitude, directly east, followed my house directly above all day long, high in the sky, and set directly west to, now, you know, now that we got this east and west thing all like screwed up, okay, I'm talking about 90 degrees rise, 270 degrees set. I watched it with my very own eyes. I watched the sunrise and the sunset, just a 12-hour day, okay? That should not have been able to happen because the sun was tracking in a straight line over the equator, which happens to be 0 degrees latitude way down south that way. Okay. I am above the Tropic of Cancer. Even the sun should not have been even with my house. Okay. My house, I tell this all the time. So everybody goes, oh, that's really research. My house is set east and west on its lot. So I can't help that. I didn't build it. It was already there. Okay. And so that's an object to use. I think it's pretty scientific to use an object that's in a fixed location to watch a moving object go by, don't you think? Okay. So
where was the moon?
I asked other people. It was really late that at night. It wasn't up during the night.
Was it
3 o'clock in the morning?
Was it at 9270 off?
Totally different. Totally different trajectory.
Oh, okay.
It's completely independent of its sister. And so the point is that on the globe and on your flat Earth circle model, that can't happen. Okay. The only way that could happen is not by the terrain, but by this, whatever the shape of the ceiling is, and you know, There's only so many ways you can say this. So for the sun to jump all the way to appear to come up directly east at the 27th north latitude, it is an anomaly. Okay. Now the day after, back south again. Back south again. So what, you know, this is something that is going to, you know, bother the crap out of me until I can figure out how's it doing that. And what is the shape of the ceiling? What is the angle of the dangle of the ceiling? What kind of refraction is going on that can create that kind of anomaly?
You know what Lawrence was quoting before, Thomas Thompson, who I'm sorry.
Thomas Thompson.
Oh, yeah. I did get it right. Go yeah, right. Good Thomas me. Thompson.
this will awesome. Make him has a happy.
Oh, that's good. Yay. Good for you. Shout out. It's fascinating, you know, with all our talk of, you know, Pac-Man for whatever people hate that for, you know, we're actually talking about something that's, you know, generally I would say rooted in quantum physics, something yeah. that's quantum. It's not necessarily physical matter, and it's not necessarily, you know, energy also. It's something that's quantized. There's entanglement. There's right. here and there. So I'm actually surprised that nobody sort of approached it from that sort of perspective. I mean, we didn't really spell it out for people in terms like that. You know, I don't really have any analogies in my mind right now. But I'm surprised that, you know, with the way that everybody talks about, like, energy and, like, quantum mechanics and atomic
diamagnetism yeah. and
and how about CERN and CERN yeah, and, right.
And then they're and looking and at this yeah. bozo-looking circle with a little flashlight going around in a circle. Those are the same people if trying to figure this out.
Well, it just takes a little, you know, opening your mind and considering that there's, you know, a whole other realm of science out there, you know, not on this level. It's like the other, there's some people that are in tune with it. There's some people that are trying to figure it out. But I'd say for the majority of the population, it's difficult. They hear it and they go, oh, I don't know. And
yeah, I don't understand those big words.
I don't get it.
Well, look at it this way. Yeah. Those guys way back in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth knew what they were talking about. This is the kind of reality that slaps me in the face, that shows me how much information has been hidden from us, and not just the quantity, but the quality of the information that has been sequestered away from us for, you know, thousands of years. And talk about the dumbing down. If you don't have the information, then this is our way, okay, of creating a mental picture of Nut. And how else to say her name? The big goddess with the sun going in the mouth and coming out the vagina, as Lawrence says. So the idea is they explained it that way, okay? That was the imagery that they were able to use to explain a concept then. This is the imagery that we're using now. Nut, Pac-Man. It's not that big a difference. You know, we're talking about the same concept. So for people to, I mean, every day, I never miss a day. If I go on Facebook that someone doesn't, aren't you the Pac-Man lady? Aren't you the one with the Pac-Man, Ma? Did you show that? John, do it again.
I just don't understand how
you weren't on camera. John's got a giant Pac-Man pillow.
I don't understand how it gets from one side to the other. I really don't understand how it gets from one side to the other.
I really don't understand.
I really don't understand how it only goes in one direction. Yes. I really don't get it.
How did it get back over there? I just really don't understand.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think that is the problem for a lot of so-called flat earthers that, you know, they broke through the cognitive dissonance to see that the Earth is flat, but they don't want to look any further. They've adopted what they've been taught at the start. And they don't believe that magic is possible. Magic to them is something that they cannot conceive as being achievable. But, you know.
But they believe in a supernaturally created dome. They believe in a supernaturally created ice wall. And everything on Earth was somehow supernaturally created.
Well, anyway, I've got this spoon here, and I'm going to do some magic now with this spoon.
There is no spoon.
Sorry. It's been on TV all the time recently.
There's no way you could not have said that, right?
But I've got this spoon. No, I've done some labels here now, and I'm going to, for posterity, I'm going to catch this live on camera.
I got my spoon.
Have you got a spoon, Laurie?
I actually feel really stupid because I don't have a spoon.
Laurie, go and get a spoon.
This is your spoon for life. If you lose it, you die.
But we'll just imagine that Laurie's got a spoon. I'm sure she could go in the kitchen and get one.
All right. I'll be right back. Stay right there. Don't talk about a whole bunch of stuff until I come back.
Okay.
So anyway, Lawrence, this spoon, this magical spoon.
Well, I'm going to do a magic trick. Well, not really, but I'm going to use it as to facilitate something that may be quite extraordinary, but only time will tell.
Please continue.
You stuck it on your nose. Because people are screenshots of this and they'll say,
yes, but I can't do a one-handed shuffle, unfortunately.
We will be the spoon heads.
The spoons.
It sounds okay, I'm back with my spoon.
Okay.
Okay, what are we doing?
So now we're the spoon heads. So we've done the quinoa experiment, and that's nearly coming up for 9-10 months now. Today we're going to do the jam experiment.
I can't wait for this. Are we going to eat virtual jam? What's with the spoon?
So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take off these vacuum sealed lids of this spoon. You can't do this. Well, you could do this at home, folks. And then I'm going to take a spoonful of jam out of the top to allow more air to get in. Then I'm going to seal the top down. And I've got two labels, one with no label as a control. And then we're going to examine these jam pots from week to week and see whether the ones with the nice words on stay fresher longer than those with the bad words. And the one with no label on, we'll see whether that's somewhere in between, which may happen. They may all rot, but one may rot quicker. So here we go. Take the tops off so you can see that this is jam with no mold on. I'll take the tops off and put my webcam over.
Nice sound effects, by the way, Lawrence.
Here we go. So can you see the jam? Hang on, there's the bowl. Okay. Three jars of jam. Yep. Oh. So I'm going to take a spoonful out of each one.
Oh, God, the steady cam.
There we go. So there's one lot of spoonful of jam. Yep. There's one lot of jam. There's jam number two.
I've got motion sickness.
That's the spoon cam. Yeah.
It's a spoon cam.
I'm not doing a recipe today. I'm not making jam tarts. All right.
Are you going to have peanut butter and jam tomorrow for lunch, aren't you?
I'm going to put the lids back on.
Okay.
I'm going to put the lids back on.
Oh, I love a jammy tart.
And stick the labels on, and then you can see the labels. Then I'm going to put these somewhere where Nomi's going to knock them over in the house. And
go, Finn.
Look out.
Finn's the new puppy. He's pretty puppy. Rambunctious.
Okay, so I've got that one. Love, gratitude.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, hold on. Every time me and John talk, we steal the camera. So love, gratitude, and thank you. All right. Nice job. Good words.
I didn't manage to put it on straight, but never mind. And then this other one says, you hate, you make me sick, I will kill you.
That's harsh.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, you make me sick. I will kill you. Got it.
I don't want to eat. I don't want to taste that.
I don't ever want to taste that.
I don't know if I even want to smell that.
And this is the control, has no words. And you're not going to. And you know what, Lawrence? Just for those who think that words written can't possibly manifest anything, every time you hold them up and to the camera, I'm sure the one that's rotted, the quinoa that's rotted is very shy at this point, but every time you hold them up to the camera, you read the words. So you, in effect, are talking to the jars. Okay.
Yes. Yes. You have to, instantiate it. You have to verbalize it. Give it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the idea now is you're not going to refrigerate. Are you going to refrigerate?
No, they're just going to be left in normal room temperature.
Normal room temperature. What kind of jam is it again?
Strawberry jam. Now, normally jam, once you've taken the top off, within a couple of weeks, at the unless it's refrigerated, maybe within a week, you'll start to get some of that blue penicillin mold foaming on the top.
Yeah, nice. I always love the part inside the lid. My grandma used to just scrape that off and go ahead and feed us the jam anyway. She said it wouldn't kill you.
Yeah. If anything, it's going to kill your disease.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So, good experiment. This time we have a control. We didn't have that the last time. Yeah. And so we have a love and a hate and a control. And I hope that you're just not even going to, I hope you just ignore the control. Don't speak to it. Don't hold it up to the camera. And hope Finn doesn't knock them over or get into them, and we'll be good.
And then I'm going to try another one next week or the week after, where I'm going to use some fresh fruit and see what happens to them, see whether we can preserve them.
You're going to put words on them too?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm down with that. You should try it with bread also, because bread, you know, we all know how quickly bread goes. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that, I think that's a good ending place for this hangout. And, I'm looking forward to the outcome of that experiment. And thank you, Lawrence, for just accidentally happening to figure out that East is not East on a globe, and at least not on the Google Earth globe. And I'm hoping that we will hear something from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric
Administration.
And that's such a dumb name. I don't like that name. It's probably why I can't remember what it says or what it's called. And so somebody's got some splaining to do about these anomalies and why, if you're in the far north going what you are considering due east, which is 90 degrees, why you go south. And same thing in the southeast. And same thing in the southern hemiplane or hemisphere on the globe, that if you're going east, you're actually going northeast. So somebody needs to explain that.
Yeah.
Today.
I want it now. And for those of you listening to the podcast upload of this, I'm happy to announce that we're rapidly approaching 1 million listens and downloads on our MP3 podcast. Blah. And I think that's getting pretty epic for a couple of people who get pounced on, hit pieces made about, and called the Pac-Man wacky people, and so on and so forth. Somebody out there is listening, so it should make you feel a little better, Lawrence. It makes me feel a little better that it's not a pat on the back. It's just that I happen to have a boyfriend who tracks these things and lets me know when we're approaching a landmark. And I think a million views will pop some balloons or something in a couple of weeks when we hit that magical mark. So.
Pretty awesome.
Everybody, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time. This is Lori, Lawrence, and John, and from the Flat Earth Conspiracy Channel, signing off. Sayonara.
Yeah. Good night, folks.
See ya.